Welcome back to the Ryer on YouTube channel. Travis Ryer back with you on a Wednesday night. We're still going to talk some college football. Feels like a little bit of a downtime. I know we still got the big one coming up this weekend, Army-Navy. Said it many times before, if you've ever or never had the opportunity and get the opportunity to go to an Army-Navy game, you need to do that regardless of where it's contested. I think I went to a couple of them in Baltimore. One in Philly. The game is great. Don't get me wrong. I love triple option football, so it's right up my alley. I think Jeff feels the same way. It's a throwback. It's retro ball in a lot of ways. But just the pomp and circumstance and everything that goes with it, you need to check that out. We got the Heisman Trophy coming up, officially going to be awarded this weekend. And Jeff Schmidelkoffer, Smitty, as we bring you on here, we're going to talk about Alabama's 2025 schedule reveal, because you know what? It's never too early, right? To go ahead, and we haven't even gotten the playoffs started yet. But let's talk some 2025. I mean, if you're an Alabama fan, why not after the events of last weekend?
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of very similar to last year, right? Couple of moves here and there, but just home and home, which is kind of a first really with SEC. I mean, we've had some home and home series, but they're almost like identical from last year, right? Just a couple of dates move. I mean, as far as order, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, drop Mercer, picked up Eastern Illinois late, but it almost, right, looks like the same.
Just yeah, in some ways it is, for sure. Yeah. Now, you know, obviously, you look, we'll start right there at the top, too. Florida State and Tally. No neutral site with the Crimson Tide and Seminoles this time around. You know, when I look at this schedule, too, and I think about the visiting teams, I see a lot of quarterback questions. Not that there couldn't be a similar situation in Tuscaloosa. We'll still see how things kind of finalize themselves, Jeff. But, yeah, Florida State is going to have a new starting quarterback, it appears. It might be Thomas Castellanos, the Boston College transfer. He's in Tallahassee right now on an official visit after hitting the transfer portal. Wisconsin, there was a quarterback change very early in the game against Alabama in Madison this last time. He had the injury, and then the backup came in. Didn't play particularly poorly, I didn't think. Even ULM, General Booty, one of the better names in all of college football. I think he's hit the portal from Monroe, Georgia. You look at that. What's going to be the deal with Carson Beck just in terms of the college football playoff, let alone next year? Vanderbilt, you know, you're talking about Diego Pavia trying to get an extra year. We'll see how that plays out. Missouri's going to have a new starting quarterback. Tennessee anticipates having Nico back for what could be a third and final season. Boy, Lenora Sellers has been a revelation, especially over the second half of this season. There at South Carolina, LSU, we heard earlier today, right? Garrett Nussmeier coming back to LSU, if you haven't heard that as of yet. Oklahoma very well could be with a new starting quarterback. Maybe it's Michael Hawkins Jr. We know that Jackson Arnold is looking at Auburn, speaking of the Auburn Tigers there on November the 29th. So quarterback is, I don't know. I don't know about you. Every time I look at a future schedule for a team, that's where I start. I start with quarterbacks on the other side.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And right with the portal nowadays, new quarterbacks, just about 80% of that schedule that you just named.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just never know. Gus Bus coming back to Tallahassee.
Gonna have Gus with maybe Castellanos pulling the trigger.
Right. You know, Gus is a wing T guy, you know. So gave Sir Nick a lot of headaches over
the
years.
He did. Spread you out and all the eye candy and the tempo and everything else.
Who knows, man? Who knows, right? I mean, I guess you just kind of just wait till it all falls out. And then saw something today where even the teams that lose out in the playoffs, they got 5 extra days, right, for their kids to get jumped in the portal. So, yeah, a lot of movement, man. A lot of movement for sure.
I think I said this before, too. One of the extra benefits of making the college football playoff is that even if you lose on the 20th or the 21st, you're done. You know, right? The 21st, you got a chance to, you know, address your next team. You get a little bit of a jump start on that rather than you know, playing in a bowl game on the first. I guess that works both ways, though, because if you're not in the playoff, as we've seen with Alabama, you got guys pretty much going ahead and hitting the portal before you play in a game in Tampa that really doesn't have much in the way of stakes, although Alabama always interested in a 10th win. I think we understand that. And the opponent, I think, helps Alabama in this particular instance. I think it's better for Alabama in terms of its bowl prep to know Michigan is going to be on the other side than, say, Illinois, right, which is what right. South Carolina is going to have in Orlando. And that's not to say Illinois isn't a capable team. They've been pretty solid throughout the season. But it's got to help, I think, with the engagement, knowing that that team on the other sideline, while it hasn't been a great year for the Wolverines record-wise, we know what happened the last time out and what they did in the horseshoe there in Columbus.
Yeah, and two blue bloods going at it for sure. And, you know, I was thinking about this the other night, Trav. I think that me and you have been to a few Michigan games in the Tampa area.
Yeah,
back we in have. The mid-'80s. And I think I counted seven different times since like 84.
Yeah.
That Michigan and Bama, and I may be off one or so, but that have matched up in the postseason.
Yeah, you know, we were at that Hall of Fame Bowl before it was the Outback Bowl in the old Sombrero.
Yes.
87. That was Bobby Humphrey.
Right.
That was Derek Thomas. And as I recall, we may have been a little hazy from the night before as the early kickoff, but we made our way in there down in Tampa, Coach Smitty and myself. Bama, I think, came back. We're down in that game, came back, and then Michigan wins it in the corner. John Colasar, the wide receiver for Michigan, and John Mangum, I believe, was in coverage, who went on to have just an absolutely hellacious NFL career, and Mangum had good coverage, just perfect ball. And I remember that. I remember that vaguely, Coach Smitty.
You know, yeah, a little warm that day, a little sweating some bullets out, right? So yeah, but and then I was in the Y2K game in Miami.
Oh yes,
Brady brought them back.
Alabama misses the extra point late or in overtime, and that was there was some irony there, because it was really, you could look back in that 99 season, it was a missed extra point in Gainesville that kind of helped pave the way for Alabama to go on that improbable run that season and eventually get to Michigan and Tom Brady down there in South Florida in that Orange Bowl.
Yeah, that's kind of where the legend started with Tom, for sure.
It did.
Yeah.
It did. But, we just wanted to work through the schedule. And as we do that, I've already kind of pointed to the quarterback situations that you look at. But otherwise, Smitty, I think it sets up pretty well. I mean, obviously, it's going to be challenging. That's the SEC these days. But Florida State coming off a 2-10. Got to be better than that this year, but, you know, and understanding perhaps you're going to have to deal with a guy like Castellanos, who in a Gus Malzahn offense would seem to be a good fit because he's sort of that dual threat sort of guy. But you figure this is a good time to get Florida State, especially in a season opener. You never know what you might get from Gus, though, offensively. Wisconsin, you get at home. ULM's at home. Then you got an open date before you go to Georgia. And even with Georgia, as we kind of alluded to earlier, not quite sure what to expect beginning at the quarterback position. But knowing Georgia's been an active participant in the portal with maybe more of an emphasis on the offensive side of the ball, what do you think about maybe the first half of this schedule? If we talk Florida State, ULM, Wisconsin, you get the open date after 3 weeks. Then you go Georgia, Vanderbilt, and then on the road at Missouri, Brady Cook done as the Missouri starting quarterback there as well.
Well, Castellano makes sense because he played his high school ball at Ware County in Waycross. So that makes sense if he does, because it's not far from home for him.
Right.
You know? So that makes sense if he goes. Like you said, Wisconsin reloading. The people up here in Georgia, man, they love Gunnar Stockton. They just do. You know, they loved him before Beck, really. You know, so
Well, he's a homeboy.
Yeah, Rabun County, you know, yeah. North Georgia. But it's a little difference when you're the man, you know, yeah. Who knows about, you know, Pavia from Vanderbilt, who knows what'll happen there. So, I mean, you got a hornet's nest you're going in. Athens is going to be tough.
Yeah.
Of course, South Carolina is going to be really tough. And then you got three that I see, and then Auburn, who knows down there.
Yeah, Athens should be tough. It hadn't been that tough since about, 2004 or so?
Yeah.
For Alabama, so the other side of that is you got to think at some point Georgia's going to be due to beat Alabama in the state of Georgia again at some point, whether it's Athens or Atlanta. Certainly when you look at these first five, six games going through Missouri there on October the 11th, it's still going to be Georgia that you circle. Although, you know, here's the thing for Kalen with Vanderbilt this next time. Shouldn't have a problem that week getting your guys engaged or focused, right? After what happened in Nashville.
For sure. Yeah, no, I don't think McElroy, I was listening to a podcast with McElroy, and I think it's like a reset button. Like, you know, you got to respect all opponents, because after this whole thing fell out with the CFP,
yeah,
you know, one of those two, you win. And probably got away from that a little bit, especially after Georgia. You know, they were on the highest of high. And, you know, and with this whole – it's not the same Vanderbilt anymore with this portal. Matter of fact, they picked up the linebacker, Keanu Cott, yesterday or today.
Yeah,
he committed. So, yeah. It's not the same Vanderbilt. Clark Lee's getting them in there. So, yeah, it's for sure. Those first five or six – you feel like, you know, you've got a pretty, you know, of course, health is big, you know, early in the year, but you hope your quarterback situation settled and you'll be able to, you know, do a little bit more in year two for sure.
The expectation, though, should be you're 5-1 going to Tennessee with that start, even with the three road games.
Yeah.
Florida State, Georgia, at Missouri, which, you know, aren't exactly cake in most years, but Alabama should be the better football team pretty clearly in five of those six. And then you get Tennessee in Tuscaloosa on October the 18th. And you talk about how games can change and narratives can change very quickly. The road game at South Carolina right after the home game against Tennessee with Lenore Sellers and Dylan Stewart and, you know, the guys that Shane Beamer anticipates having back. I saw the tweet earlier today, or I think it was today. They run together at our age, you know, Smitty. That Dylan Stewart getting between 1 and 1.5 for 2025. So
unbelievable.
You know, when you think about him though, and Harbor, the wide receiver, and also Sellers, and they had a freshman all SEC offensive lineman. Boy, Shane Beamer's got some big ticket items he's going to have to take care of here in the offseason where that NIL is concerned.
Yeah, and Mike Shula coming back.
How about that?
The OC, right? So, yeah, they're going to have some weapons for sure. So, in the last two times I think Bama's been to Columbia, it hasn't worked out very well. 2004 with Tyler Watts, 2002, 2003, 2004 in that area.
Yeah. 2010.
Alshon Jeffery,
Steven Garcia. Now they lit them up in 2018, I think it was over there.
Yeah.
I think it was
18. They did. That's right, Najee. That's right.
With Tua, Najee had the hurdle for you there at Williams-Price. Sure. But no, your point is a good one. It hasn't always gone smoothly. Interestingly enough, Mike Shula, maybe one of his best wins as Alabama head coach was in Columbia over, I believe it was Steve Spurrier. Yeah. And that was one of those wins where you felt like, hey, you know what? This thing might work out. And of course, it ultimately did not. But sure, I mean, that game takes on heightened awareness, not just within the league, but I think perhaps even on the national thing. The only thing you worry about with South Carolina is it seems like, Schmitty, when we talk up South Carolina, it doesn't happen. You know, when we're not really talking about South Carolina, then we get a season like we saw from the Gamecocks this time around with a 9-3 record. But then you go into another. I like where the open dates are at, too. I mean, they're staggered pretty well for you before you go into Georgia. Although I would argue in some instances, I'd rather have the bye week after a Georgia or after an LSU rather than going into a Georgia or an LSU. But the second date when you're coming off Missouri on the road, Tennessee at home, South Carolina on the road, I think that open date falls at a good spot before you fire it back up with back-to-back home games, which is interesting too, with LSU. And you should have a little bit of payback for the Sooners, you would think too.
Yeah, and South Carolina. I mean, South Carolina's 10 yards away from getting a chance at a field goal to beat you this year too. So
you're
right. There's a lot of attention bells going on over there in the complex, right? So, you still feel, though, that you're the better team in those three or four. Tennessee's going to be tough, but Tennessee's different when you get them away from Neyland. So you still feel like you got a better football team if you can get your quarterback situation figured out by then, you know. So
You get Eastern Illinois, the alma mater of one Tony Romo. That'll be the Tony Romo game. We'll refer to Eastern Illinois. And, by the way, after the latest college football playoff field reveal, good luck getting Alabama and some of these other SEC teams to give up that mid to late November FCS opponent. Good luck with that moving forward. I don't think we're going to see that. And then you go to Auburn, which you talk about. This is a season in which a couple places, they kind of remind me of each other, how things can be harrowing at times. I think South Carolina is still that kind of place. And then you go to Auburn, obviously. We know the history there for Alabama. Although, of late, it's been Alabama that's been delivering the liver punches in that series at Jordan-Hare. It's been pretty amazing to watch that turn around. And, you know, as we talked about with quarterback, who's it going to be for Auburn? Malik Murphy, the Duke transfer, I believe, is on campus at Auburn right now. So maybe it's Malik Murphy. I think Jackson Arnold is in that mix. You know, once the portal opened, kind of knowing the situation with Hugh and how quarterback-centric his deal is, he has to have that guy at quarterback. He has to, because you can give him a Jarquez Hunter. He'll kind of turn his nose up at that, I think, in most years. He wants that dude at the quarterback position. And I think Murphy or Arnold, one of these guys is going to get paid too, I would think. Both of them are going to get paid. It's just a question of where.
Yeah. Well, Malzahn is very similar to Freeze. They're very QB-centric, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they don't – kind of similar to Alabama this year, right? They're very QB-centered. But what they're asking them to do, especially in the run game, and he's got to have a guy for that to work, period. You know, and that was kind of what got Malzahn at the end after Nick Marshall. They really didn't have a guy that could do what Malzahn wanted to do at Auburn, you know. Yeah. So they just never could get a guy in there like Marshall. But anyway, so it's interesting year. You're right. A lot of new quarterbacks in the league coming.
And we talk about who's going to be playing quarterback for Alabama. Again, we're still waiting to kind of see how that plays itself out. And also just the roster in general. What we'll do now is we'll bring up the portal entrance for Alabama. Charlie Potter there at BamaOnline.com does a great job of keeping track of that. So he's going to be our go-to as we work through that list for the Alabama Crimson Tide. You see some of these guys, Jaheim Otis, that one came down the pike a while back. That came out in early October. Keanu Coote, as you referenced earlier. Jalil Hurley, the corner, also a special teamer. And then a run on wide receivers, Kobe Prentice, Caleb Odom, the five-star freshman from your neck of the woods over there in the Atlanta area. Miles McVay is one of a couple of offensive tackles who are apparently leaving the program. Kendrick Law, one of those wide receivers. That's the one for me. I'll get your thoughts on this too, that I know he may not be the greatest fit for what Kalen DeBoer and this offense really want to be about big picture wise. But that one still hurts me because that's a selfless dude. You watch him play the game, physical, you know, maybe it said something about Alabama this year that you really were looking for a wide receiver to provide that edge, right? The physicality, maybe on the offensive side of the ball more than you would have thought. Danny Lewis, the tight end, it's a backlog of some tight ends, even though you're losing a couple of guys there as well. Hunter Osborne, defensive lineman, looking to make the move. Nikhil Bertrand hadn't been with the team over the second half of the season. He's that other offensive tackle that's leaving. And then we learned today, Dylan Lonergan, the quarterback, looking to make the jump. I get that, too, for Dylan Lonergan. I've been a big Dylan Lonergan proponent. Not because I feel like he should be the starter at Alabama right now, but you can kind of just watch some guys, even in limited sample sizes, and go, this guy can play a lot of places. Yeah. And I think he's got those attributes. And again, I get it because even if Jalen Milroe does move on to the NFL or isn't back at Alabama, you got Ty Simpson there waiting in the wings. So you're still not really in next guy up mode if you're Dylan Lonergan, where you could be that guy at a lot of other places.
Yeah, and Lonergan played at a real high, at a high level up in North Atlanta at Brookwood High School too. So that I think he's very, very, very good, and he could be like an Eli Holstein that went to Pitt, right? I mean, he could end up like that, something like that.
Yeah.
So you can't blame him. I was a little surprised at the receivers, just because, you know, do they know something? Do they know that maybe Milroe's coming back, and they don't, you know, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I was shocked that that many receivers. Some of these other guys, these offensive linemen. One of them, I think, was from Texas A&M that came in from A&M last year.
Tron,
yeah. So I was, you know, and then the portal opens again after spring. So yeah. I was like, okay, maybe they go through spring, see how it works out.
And I still think that's the time to get in because you can kind of still give it a little more time where you're at. And then as we saw last year, you know, when the second window came open, there were some defensive linemen that to me were like just rotational guys. They were impactful starter types that got straight paid because the value of their position at the time that they came out, there wasn't a lot of those kind of guys, corners, guys like that. You know, when you talk about those wide receivers though, it's an interesting point you make perhaps, but I think too fit, I go back to that with Kendrick. I love Kendrick as just a football player. I almost wanted to see Kendrick on defense just to see if you could have done something with him over there as a potential playmaker. Caleb Odom is an interesting prospect, always has been. He's only on campus for a season, so we'll never know at Alabama. But he has that size at about 6'5". I don't know what his thought process really is. I know there's stuff out there that we hear. But, you know, I've made the case that I think big picture wise, Caleb Odom might be better off in more of an Evan Engram type of flex player.
Right.
You know, because I don't see any way, and still he's a young player, could change in the next year. Really, you know, he could go out to Colorado and he and Juju reunite and light it up. You know, it wouldn't surprise me, especially in the Big 12. But he doesn't strike me as a true outside guy. You know, like he's not an X, not a true X. Kobe Prentice, you know, it kind of felt like it was trending towards him moving on regardless. So, like your thoughts on really Odom to start with, and then maybe, you know, what you see from Kendrick Law, what might be the best sort of fit for him?
Well, what, you know, talking about Odom, I mean, he had a great spring last year, you know, and then had a great fall camp going. You know, you heard a lot about Caleb Odom, about what his production was at practice. And then, like I said, I think his is just being young, need kind of a knee-jerk reaction, really. I agree with you about Kendrick Law. When he put his name in, I was like, because I'm with you, man.
And you're a coach, so.
I like that guy. His blocking on the perimeter was, and especially in the Georgia game, was massive. So he sprung a lot of those runs. And then, you know, I don't know what happened with, I'm a line of scrimmage guy, so, and I know Jaheim Otis was very productive last year. I don't know what happened, but you hate to lose a guy with that size, and he's an athlete too. He can move. I mean, especially two gapping it, you know, and I know Coach Womack don't do a lot of two gapping, but man, that's a big athletic body inside that you need in this league.
Keeps your linebackers running.
Yeah, man. So,
Otis was interesting because his true freshman year, he lost all the weight. You know, I think he was over 400 pounds.
Yeah.
Got on campus, you know, got into the program and just dropped weight and then really had a very promising true freshman campaign. But I think there were some injuries involved there and just the sophomore slump and just never really, really recovered from it. Was a rotational guy early in the season, but then it started to look like they were starting to pare some things down and he wasn't really going to be a part of that. But you're right. I mean, when you have big people like that, and this isn't an Alabama defensive line here in the last few years that's had a Quinnen Williams, that's had a Deron Payne, right? Hasn't even had, you know, Dalvin Tomlinson and those kind of guys that we used to just take for granted. They were almost complimentary DLs to some of these other guys like Jonathan Allen. And now, boy, you'd do flips if you could have a Dalvin Tomlinson on this roster.
Yeah, nobody out there like that right now. I mean, guys play hard. They do. They play hard. They give, but those guys were just
much of the same guys, though. I mean, really, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the good news is you can stay fresh because you can rotate a lot of them. The bad news is you can stay fresh because you can rotate a lot of them.
That's right. That's
you
right.
Know, you don't have one or two that you feel like you need to ride for 50 snaps, right? So that's kind of where that. We got some of the fellas chiming in here in the show chat. Smitty, Tex Tider, offers up a hearty howdy, boys. Tex Tider, what's going on, my guy? Good to hear from you on a Wednesday night. On late notice, too, by the way. We just kind of – it's kind of a pop-up show here on Ryer on YouTube. DB King, what about this statement? I really appreciate what Milrow has done for us, says DB King. But he could really screw up our roster if he comes back. Screw up the roster. Wow. Pretty strong. Yeah. I don't know if I'd go that far. I do think, I don't know. The guy is a very talented player. He's done some great things. Won the Campbell Trophy last night, I think it was. I mean, let's not just sort of gloss over some of his accomplishments, but there's certainly been some down moments as well. And legacy is a very real thing at that position, but especially at that position at the University of Alabama. So part of me, you know, kind of would like for him to come back and go out on a better note than his second year as a starter. But then there's part of me too, Smitty, that thinks if he isn't the quarterback that Kalen DeBoer really needs or wants in a system that is, as we've talked about, very quarterback centric, trigger guy type centric. It might be best for both parties if Jalen goes ahead and takes the NFL plunge.
Yeah, for sure. And hey, listen, there hasn't been, and I'm sure Jalen is probably the first one that knows his weaknesses of playing that position, and he knows the pressure and what that position takes. But you can't find a better ambassador for the university. This kid's been through everything. I mean, he's had coordinators telling him he wasn't good enough to play, you know what I mean, at the same school. Yeah. So, you know, credit him for the loyalty that he showed.
Right.
And credit, you know, I think this year was getting off topic, but I think Coach DeBoer had to show some loyalty to him as well. Yeah. And I think Coach DeBoer, they had to work an offense around what Jalen's strengths were. Really and truly, you think about it. Maybe Tommy Rees was a better fit for what Jalen likes to do versus because Coach DeBoer, if you watch any of the Michael Penix stuff.
I think at the end of Tommy Rees, it got to the point where it was really working pretty well.
Yeah.
I know the numbers against Michigan in the Rose Bowl throwing the football weren't especially great, but Georgia late in the 2023 season and kind of how they closed out the Bulldogs and really made good use of Jalen's skill set. You know, there's things where Jalen is definitely still, I guess, growing as a passer. The quick game stands out to me. You know, that's something that they really didn't even try to do with him last year. DeBoer and Nick Sheridan tried to do it this year, and it was okay at times, but it certainly wasn't Bryce Young-ish. It wasn't Tua Tagovailoa off RPO, you know, that type of stuff. It hasn't gotten to that point with Jalen. And look, they got a guy coming in, and I don't like anointing true freshmen, especially at the quarterback position. But I don't know if you've seen this kid, Keelon Russell, that they've got coming from Texas.
Yeah.
I think it was a Gatorade National Player of the Year. We just learned that here maybe today. Go watch his tape and then watch Washington with Penix and think about maybe, you know, what they want to be on offense. And, you know, he may not be at a point year one to do that. It may be if it's not Jalen. This is the scenarios I'm throwing out there. If it's not Jalen that's back, it still may be Ty Simpson. But as a trigger guy, Keelon Russell looks like he's everything Kalen DeBoer and Nick Sheridan could want in the quarterback position.
Yeah, and I think that's where you'll see a difference. Whoever, like you said, whoever that guy may be, whoever can run his system with the quick game, with finding the finding the force player and who are you throwing off of and reading immediately, I think that's where he wants to. And he kind of said that in the last press conference, right? A little bit. He kind of, you know, if you read between the lines a little bit about moving people and putting people in place where we think.
Yeah.
You know, it was kind of coach speak, but you could tell where he was going with it.
Right.
So
I think Kalen was intrigued too, though. You know, to have this guy with that type of athleticism and skill set and can throw the deep ball. I mean, he can take shots deep now.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not a hole in Jalen Milroe's game at all. And I think he did improve more in the intermediate game. But at the end of the day, and this kind of goes back to wide receiver too. When we talk about fit, you know, when I look at, and I see it here from Tex Tider in the show chat, who says, Odom leaving hurts my heart. Had great hopes for him. And I think Caleb Odom might go somewhere else and be a great player. He might have been a great player at Alabama. We'll never know. But when I think back to Washington's receivers from last year, from 2023, you know, I guess a Dunsey was maybe that kind of player. But, yeah, I think Shep, with those wide receivers and Kalen and Sheridan with the quarterback, they know exactly what they want. So I think that's what's going to be interesting to watch here in some of the decisions that are made. And I think also guys these days, Smitty, they're taking their cues based on NIL deals.
No.
And when it comes back around to exit meetings and things like that, end of the season meetings, I think a lot of these guys, when they kind of find out where they're at in the NIL scheme of things, they get a little bit of a clue in terms of their priority, maybe in their position group or in the program.
Yeah, there was a coach on Football Scoop the other day talking exactly about that. Like, the biggest pain in the ass right now is some of these people that are representing these players.
The agents.
Like, they got agents from whoever, and demanding money, and these guys are going where the money's at. You know,
that was Corvell out at Colorado State. That was, if you haven't, if you're watching this and you didn't see those comments from the Colorado
State. He's spot on, man.
He is spot on.
Yeah.
And yeah, like, you know, some of these reps getting 15, 20% cut. of the NIL deals, and an NFLPA certified agent can get a max of three. And I can tell you, NFLPA agents, in a lot of cases, they're not even getting the three because they're having to compete with other representation that's willing to do it for 2%. So you get some of these reps that are doing it for 1.5% in the NFL. Meanwhile, in college football, we've got reps getting 15, 20%. And really initiating the process, right? Driving the process in terms of creating the market for a kid who might be perfectly happy at one place. But now you got this rep telling you, you know, I talked to so-and-so. I don't know what you're getting at X school, but Z school is willing to pay you a couple $100,000 a year. What are you going to do if you're the kid? I mean, come on. Most of them, we know what they're going to do because they're doing it. Yeah. You know, right now. And the thing is too, at least NFL agents have to be certified by the NFLPA. Like you have to pass a legitimate exam, go through the process. You're vetted, your legitimacy and all those things, credentials. You essentially have to have a law degree of some sort. You don't have to have any of that right now in college football. All you got to have is a phone. You can make some calls and come up with some deals, and you're looking at 15, 20% off of 200 grand or a half million. You know, do the math on that real quick.
Yeah, well, we're seeing it at the high school level. Like, we got a couple of kids at our school right now, and the college coaches are nowhere to be seen because the portal's open. So they're not even coming in looking at some of the kids to develop right now until they go through all this process.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
When the portal closes in late December, when we go back to school in January, they'll kind of start showing up. But you know, a lot of pieces are already going to fall into place. Yeah, so it trickles down to the high school kids. Yeah. You know, they're frustrated. You know, if you're one of the top, you know, 300 or whatever, you're good. There's a lot of kids out there that can play. You know, that they're not even getting talked to right now, just because, you know. Yeah. That's the world. That's the college football world right now.
So again, as we work through the transfer portal where it relates to Alabama, and we also see here, you know, some of the targets, Kelby Collins, a defensive lineman originally from the state of Alabama a couple of years ago, made the move down to Gainesville to join the Gators. He is looking to bounce perhaps back to the to his home state in Alabama. Kevin Concepcion, a wide receiver from NC State, also on Alabama's radar. This is a guy I like a lot too, because we talked about tight end with Danny Lewis moving on and some holes you're going to have to fill really at the top of that depth chart. Luke Haas is a target that Alabama was involved with a couple of years ago as a high school player. And these are sort of the initial targets for Alabama. Jeff, does this kind of make sense? I mean, I guess it does. I mean, when you line up positional value, defensive line, and also fit, you know, because 3-4 in versus a Husky and those type of things, going from Saban's defense to what Alabama runs now. We talked about the attrition at wide receiver. Perhaps you go get a proven veteran option in Concepcion, and then tight end with what you got to fill in there.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that the kid from Florida is that would be huge, but I think he's on Texas A&M's radar also. So, yeah, I think those three they're addressing those needs, right? You see those three, and I think they're all in Tuscaloosa this weekend.
Yep.
Yeah. So, Concepcion's had two real productive years at NC State, right? So, I think he's caught 10 and 8 the last 2 years. In the mid 600-700 yards receiving. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, I think a lot of that, though, depends on who's going to be the trigger man, right? I think a lot of that will depend on that.
That could have something to do with it, no doubt about it. And between all of this, Smitty, you got to get ready for a bowl game, right? And you think about it, portal entrance on one side lead to opportunity and an increased sense of urgency, I got to think, for some of these guys. Whereas, you know, it used to be a couple of years before you really felt that, maybe in terms of urgency. Wide receiver, for example, with the departures we've seen to this point, and knowing Alabama is already telling you if you play that position, we're looking, and maybe that had something to do with the departures too, we're looking to upgrade. And we know coaches and programs, they're always looking to do that. But Concepcion being one of those options out there right now, apparently. But, you know, you've got some young guys on this team like Rico Scott, Emmanuel Henderson, been around now for a couple of years. You know, the potential to bring back Ryan Williams and Jeremy Bernard, that's quite appealing. But, you know, you got to have those next guys up. When you think about the Bubba Hamptons and, you know, some of these guys that they brought in the last couple of years, I'm not saying that it's time to panic if you're a first year guy. But the other side of maybe getting some increased opportunities because of what we've seen is that you might better take advantage of them pretty quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. Your window is a lot shorter nowadays, or a lot more closed than it has been in the past, right? You just hate to lose like the guys like the Caleb Odom that haven't even started developing yet, you know?
And you had him on the field early in your last game.
Caleb
Odom's situation wasn't that they didn't at least have him in the mix. Now, we can talk about, did he have targets? No, he really didn't. But it seemed to me like, and you know this as a coach, but you tell me, it felt like they were trying to keep him encouraged that, you know what, you're not having a Ryan Williams season, but you're in here top middle of the rotation. We're getting you into games. We're keeping you a part of things. In the end, I guess it still didn't matter.
No, man, it's a hard – in today's player, it's just a hard cycle to break. You know, we try to tell our players, listen, your summers are for – you know, your showcases, go out and do you know, go get recognition. But when you come back to this team, it's time to win some ball games. You know what I mean? You got to put that to the side. I think a lot of it's maturity. That's the reason why I wish, you know, he would stay, you know, but somebody's probably in his ear. You know, we're just speculating here now, but somebody's probably in his ear, and he's, like you said, he might. But, you know, there's 6-7 schools, the Georgias, the Alabamas, the Ohio States. Where are you going to go with more resources that are better than that? So it tells you they're chasing the money. I mean,
yeah.
You know, where are you going to go? There's 10 schools that, and he's playing at one.
Yeah.
Where do you have it better?
There's still a faction of prospects out there, Smitty, that they do take into account the entirety. They do take into account the school, the football program, who I'm going to be playing for. But man, there are many, many more that the official visit process, they get off the plane on Friday. Really, for a good bit of these kids, and maybe even more so the people around them in a lot of instances, that first meeting they want is with NIL. You know, they'll skip dinner. They'll skip, you know, steak dinners, 5-star restaurants, all those things. Just let me know when we meet with NIL. Let me know what my deal is. Yeah. That's really what it's become. I mean,
and as you know, you had, you know, Savannah playing, and yeah, it's what never gets brought up is how are these kids eligible, right? Yeah. How are they staying? Because every time you move schools, you're losing credit hours. You know, so how are these?
That's a good point.
I know online classes now are, you know, much more prevalent than it was when we were in school.
Right.
But I know even my son, when he went from Mercer to Butler, he lost like 10 credit hours. These kids like I saw where was this Eric Gilbert at LSU's on the move again.
I didn't even know he was still playing.
No, yeah, it's just his
leaving Nebraska.
Yeah, he's been at Georgia, LSU, Nebraska.
TJ Finley is going for his fifth school, the quarterback that was most recently at Western Kentucky. He had been at LSU, he'd been at Auburn, been at Texas State. Last year, played against Alabama at Western Kentucky. The drive for five is on, and you got, because of COVID too, the Bowman, the quarterback at Oklahoma State, I think he recently got granted an 8-year.
Yeah. Same with Cam Rising. I mean, Cam Rising and Trevor Lawrence came out the same year.
That's wild. You know, and then, I mean, some of these guys too, I mean, they look like alumni game guys. You know what I'm saying? Like, you have the alumni game and you bring back the old heads or the guys that played 5 or 6 years ago.
They're still there.
And then you bring them back for the alumni game.
Yeah.
And kind of like Jack Dundee in Best of Times.
Yeah. When
he, against Dr. Death with Reno Hightower at quarterback. But, yeah, this is what we're into. It's a bizarre time, not just because of NIL and the portal either. I mean, we got damn quarterbacks 27, 28 years old, you know, and the clock never stopped. It's not like they stopped their eligibility clock, came back, or like this is NAIA where you see that.
Right.
This is major college football 2024. Yeah. Still taking some time to wrap the old head around it. So the to-do list for Kalen DeBoer and his staff. I guess it might start with the psyche of your roster, given the disappointment of not being in the college football playoff and trying to get your guys as a starting point for your bowl prep. Does it start there, Smitty? I mean, is it about the health of your team, getting all these guys as healthy as you can get them? You're having to make some roster decisions already that you used to not have to make until January 2nd or so, at least definitively anyway.
Yeah. I think as soon as they can get back doing football and get their mind off of this stuff and getting back together, you know, there's all this, you know, I'm sure they're on their phones right now at their apartments, you know, and talking to whoever, but as soon as they can, I think you're right. Getting them healthy. Then let's get the bowl prep. That's number one, because that's what they're there for, and that's what they want to do anyway. They want to play ball. So I think the coaches, this is what comes with it now, you know, and I think the busiest man in that building for the next 20 days is probably Courtney Morgan. That guy's earning his check.
Yeah. Right now.
So, yeah. You know, I think the rest of the coaches are going to get out and recruit a little bit, and then – but, you know, you figure probably a lot of those guys are going to see portal kids.
Yeah.
You know? So,
yeah.
I don't know. It's crazy times, man.
It is. And, guys, the thing that makes people like Courtney Morgan so good at that job is that typically they aren't surprised. You know, this right. stuff hits the public, hits our timelines, and raises some eyebrows. But people like Courtney Morgan – they're paid not to be surprised, and they're especially paid to keep their head coach in a position where he's not surprised. Like, if you're in that job, the last thing you want is for your head coach to feel surprised by anything like that. Yeah. That's essentially what you're there to do. So the to-do list starts with getting healthy, the psyche. What about positionally for this team? I mean, everybody's going to talk about Jalen, the quarterback situation. Thinking ahead to 2025 and trying to get that springboard effect, Smitty, the offensive line, maybe tackle. I mean, you got to start contemplating some departures there on that interior too. I mean, you could have an entirely new guard to guard situation, and feel better about your tackles. I think they've got some young players on the interior, that have the potential to step in there. Vandermark, I think, has another year. So he's played a lot of football at guard and even center. Joseph Iannata is a young player. Ola Salinen, you know, a young player there on the interior. What about it positionally for you that, you know, you're already thinking about in terms of 2025 and how you'd like to maybe see some guys step forward here in this bowl prep?
I think they kind of treated it normally like Saban used to treat the first 3 or 4 days like spring practice. Like, yeah, he'd move people around, find combinations,
yeah,
you know, of course.
And that Saban was even in prep for college football playoff games.
Correct.
Right. He still did it.
And yeah, and I would think that the staff will probably do the same thing. What is Brailsford going to do? Is he's, you know, he could come
top
back.
Three center maybe in the NFL draft, but yeah.
So, but you know, earlier what you said is like, you know, Saban used to tell them if you're in the top, you know, the first two rounds, you go. But now with the NIL money, you may make more staying.
Good point.
One more year and develop.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, I would definitely address that. The tight end position is big. You know, do you let those guys, do those guys that have already declared practice? The Arizona State coach said that the other day. He said he embraced that if you want to leave, you can still play in the playoff. I mean, it's
a little different deal though, right? Playoff crazy. Versus.
Yeah. So he said
he'll help West Bowl.
Help them get where they want to go. So, you know, they have to kind of, you know, appease some of this, you know, some of this stuff. So, which is just different in our
generation. And every guy's different. You know, right. I know with Jalen, a lot of people look at the Sugar Bowl a couple of years ago. Bryce Young played. I mean, he was a slam dunk, top three overall pick going into all that. And he still played. But, you know, that doesn't always translate. I don't know anything about what's going to happen or not happen. I mean, my expectation would be that Jalen would play. I mean, there's still something to be said about wearing that C on your jersey, too, as a permanent team captain. I think that probably went a long way with Bryce, you know, a couple of years ago. So we've heard from Kalen, though. Kalen seems very optimistic. I've heard other coaches, too. And I wonder if this goes back to maybe some NIL deals. Your ass is contracted to play throughout the season.
Yeah.
You know, like maybe there's some non-opt-out clauses maybe in some of these deals. But, you know, you're hearing – I've heard from more coaches than I would have thought that think that they're going to have pretty much a team that is close to whole other than injuries. Going into some of these bowl games that aren't CFP related.
Yeah. Well, you know, you look back, Jerry Jeudy played, you know, back in 19 when, you know, against Michigan.
Yeah.
Will Anderson played, you know, I mean, they do things a little different, maybe drop him into coverage and not bring him all the time, you know, to protect him. Like you said, Bryce played. So, yeah, I would think that the way this team, they portray themselves, you know, about being close and everything they've gone through, I think most of them embrace playing. I really do. I mean, you know, we'll see though. Every time
I think beyond all that, I think Jalen, and again, I would anticipate he's going to play. I think he needs to play. I think some of these guys where the NFL is concerned, I think Malachi needs to play. You know, I think some of these guys that are either perhaps going to go to the NFL or they're out of eligibility and they're going regardless. You know, I think most of these guys on this roster, if that's kind of in their mindset, they probably need to play. So we got a question here from Pat Nelly in the show chat. It says, is Keon Sabb healthy or out for the year? I'm not anticipating him being back, especially for, you know, a bowl game in Tampa. And on top of that, we talk about positives from the season, kind of in retrospect, Smitty, Bray Hubbard, you know, was a real positive in the wake of the loss of Keon Sabb to go along with Malachi Moore, you know, but again, I think there's still some young guys, even back there that could benefit, you know, like Bray, like Red Morgan, like Zabian Brown, like Zay Mincy. You know, they had some young guys that they had to kind of go with a little bit this year. But those are typically the lumps that you take one year, the next year you end up being really damn good. It'll be interesting to see with Damani Jackson too, I guess.
Well, there's no substitute for live bullets game time, you know, and another chance to play against a, you know, a blue blood in Tampa and, you know, it's going to be a good competitive game. And, you know, sitting here thinking about the wide receiver position, who they lost early with Jalen Hill. And they said Jalen Hill's now out running and rehabbing. Mm-hmm. So, you know,
for me, he's a fit. Now, he may come out tomorrow and hit the portal.
Right.
But when I think about size, speed, skill set, he reminds me of a Polk or an Adunze, those kind of guys that we saw at Washington. He's that type of true X outside guy.
Yeah.
And maybe if you're Caleb Odom, you know that Jalen Hale's coming back too, on top of perhaps
Dad and getting Cole Adams
back. Brian Williams, you know? Cole Adams. Could be some different things that go into all that. Hey, Smitty, before we get out of here, I had to ask you about this as a coach yourself. What about Bill Belichick to the North Carolina Tar Heels? I thought maybe his new girlfriend hadn't finished school, so she was going to like finish up at UNC and he could coach the football team while she's there. But no, it kind of feels like the movie Back to School. Remember that
Rodney,
one?
With Rodney Dangerfield and the triple Wendy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The triple Billy coming up at Chapel Hilly.
That'd be awesome. Yeah. Well, it's funny you mentioned that because on Monday Night Football, I always watch the channel with Eli and Peyton. It's awesome, by the way.
Manning's cast. Yeah, I enjoy that.
If you want to watch, if you want to know, those guys know it inside out. Well,
yeah.
Belichick is on there this week, right? And it's just hard for me to, in today's college football, that guy being able to relate with these 18 to 22-year-old kids, you know, I'm sure he'll probably do fine, but man, that just seems like an odd fit, doesn't it? Is it just like a home run?
It does, except for the era we're in now.
Yeah.
Because he's pretty much put it out there. You know, I think he kind of looks at it kind of like Nick looked at it even before the portal and NIL, that he wasn't restricted by one pick around. He could go out. And if he could find 25 first rounders, he could sign 25 first rounders.
Yeah.
And there's not you're not as inhibited, you know, and especially now when it comes to talent acquisition. And Bill Belichick was the king of the waiver wire. You know, the drafts didn't always go great in New England, but in terms of free agency, maybe guys under the radar a little bit, he could go get them and then plug them in. Now, look, it was great because he had Tom Brady ultimately is his quarterback. I mean, we all know that. Brady was obviously a lift all boats guy. It's weird to me in some ways. I think I saw where he's got a 3-year deal, which I think some people look at that and go, a 3-year deal. Well, in the transfer portal era, you don't need 5-year deals anymore.
No,
you don't need it for recruiting because hell, the players are looking at you like you're looking at them. I may not be here in a year. Yeah. You damn sure may not be here in a year. So, that didn't really take me aback. It really does look like an NFL situation over there at North Carolina from his deal being 3 years, which will get him to 75, I guess. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I think Belichick also looks at it from an NFL perspective. Let's say right now, if I was a free agent coach and I had interest from the NFL, what division would I not want to go to? I wouldn't want to go to like the NFC North right now, which is a brute. I wouldn't want to go to the Bears right now with the Packers, the Lions, and the Vikings playing at the levels they are. And he's not going to the NFC North in the ACC. He's going into a league that I'm sure he looks at and goes, you know, we can go in here pretty quickly, and with the portal and some NIL help, you know, we can be very viable. You know, he just saw SMU get an at-large bid out of the ACC. I think he probably looks at it and thinks it's more than a try, I guess, obviously, right?
Yeah, well, Bill will have people in place where he don't have to deal with a lot of that, right? Kind of like he'll have people in place like a Courtney Morgan type guy that's going to be buffer him from a lot of the stuff that, you know, but you know, you're right. He's dealt with the NFL prima donna guys, right? You know, the only difference
and is I'm Bill freaking Belichick.
Right. And those guys at that level are under contract. However, where these guys are just, you know,
yeah, I mean, if you're going to say I can go to North Carolina, they need help anyway, and they're going to pump up their NIL, and I'm going to play for the greatest, certainly professional football coach of all time. You know, even if it is for a couple of 3 years.
That's attractive.
Yeah. I don't think he's going to have to, you know, beat on the table for a lot of these guys. Yeah, I think a lot of these guys,
Herm Edwards in Arizona State.
I think I think it's good for Bill that the NCAA is toothless as it's ever been, because that's probably attractive to Bill too. Well, I mean, the days of the NCAA really having bite, they're gone. You know, you can essentially do whatever the hell you want now. So, you know, he's not going to have to deal. He's not going to have a compliance guy or gal on him every day about the gray areas. You know, there are no gray areas anymore. It's one big kind of whatever you want to do at this point. So
a lot of eyes on Chapel Hill.
Oh yeah. It'll be fun. I mean, more than ever, it makes me wish that North Carolina was in the SEC. Yeah. You talk about another expansion for the SEC. Give me Duke and Carolina. But the problem is, probably by the time that happens, Bill will be out of the hill at that point.
Yeah, Bill will be.
But I still like those hoops. What about Alabama going to Chapel Hill and just pantsing?
Yeah, that was
Proud Tar Heels. That was a layup line. That was a layup line in the Dean Dome.
Yeah. It was. It was a no paint threat for the Hills this year. Usually got the big guy, the rim defender. They didn't have that.
No, they did not. After his 7 years in college basketball.
Yeah.
So there you go, Jeff. I think we've covered it tonight.
Yeah.
Hey, and we certainly appreciate everyone checking in here in the live chat. It's been a lot of fun. Thank you so much. If you haven't subscribed to our YouTube channel here, certainly hope you'll hit that subscribe button right now. We've got a notification bell right there. If you'd hit that, you'll be notified to all of our content as it drops right here on Ryer on YouTube. Coach Smitty, you talked about it earlier. We've seen a few Michigan-Bama games together. I don't know if we'll catch this one together, but we'll damn sure talk about it in its wake. But we'll talk a few more times before that early kickoff on New Year's Eve. We've been to some New Year's Eve games again where maybe we didn't feel so good. I think, didn't we go to we went to a Gator Bowl, Michigan Ole Miss Gator Bowl.
Yeah.
Early.
It's and like 74 degrees at like 9:30 in the morning.
Foggy. I think I got a hot dog to try to fend off the hair of the dog, and I got some mustard on my jeans or something, and I just
things don't go well. Things
I just rubbed it straight into my jeans. Then
good stuff. Yeah. All right. Yeah.
Good time. Good time.
Yeah, man.
All right. Appreciate you, Deborah. Pete, appreciate you, Tex Titer, Pat, and everyone else who tuned in this evening. Thanks again for checking us out. Smitty, we'll do it again soon.
Yeah, man. Yeah, let's get this playoff going. Let's see what.
Yeah, I'm fired up. SMU, Penn State, Boise. You know, who knows?
Who knows? Well, it's going to take all the talk out of it. It's going to be settled on the field, which is what we want anyway. You know,
it is.
Maybe this team didn't get in and that team didn't get in, but. After, you know, at the end of the day, is there problems with the system? Yeah, but at least it's not four teams, you know.
Yeah.
At least it's 12 and maybe they'll go to 16 and be done with it. That's always been my thing. You know, we grew up watching Tracy Ham at Georgia Southern, and we always used to say, well, why don't they do this?
FCS.
Yes.
Irk Russell,
one double A, one double A football. Yeah. You know, against the Furmans of the world and all those
purple paladins.
Yeah. But now finally, after 45 years, maybe they're trying to.
We're at least going to be at 14 in 2026. And it wouldn't surprise me if we're more like maybe 16. Who knows? Yeah.
Yeah. Who knows?
Yeah. That's where we're headed. But right now we're headed into the night for Smitty. I'm Trav. Thanks for joining us right here on Ryer on YouTube. And until next time, so long, everybody.